Yeah, maybe before we start with the whole theme, just a few words to my person so that you get to know me a little bit better, but you will get to know me even during the course, because a lot of what I'm saying to you and sharing with you is basically part of my life. But so that you know who's standing here with this grumpy face and the wrinkles. My name is Gottfried, as you know. Gottfried Hetzer, typical German name. I am German, you hear it probably with my accent, although I try to hide it. I'm married to Ruth. You might meet Ruth tomorrow when she comes in to help a little bit here. We are married actually the second time to each other, twice to each other. Now if you add this up, our two marriages, we are now 27 years into our marriage. We have four children. Three natural daughters. The youngest one is already with the Lord, and an adopted child, a son who is HIV positive from birth. We had quite some experiences with him today with the doctors, but I'll share maybe about this a little bit later as well. By profession, I'm a financial controller or a financial manager, whatever you want to call it. I've been working in the industry for about two decades, and most of the time in financial controlling. I've been the guy who has compiled data for the management and presented them the basis for decision making. And I've done that on national basis in Germany, on a European basis, and the final 6 years even on a worldwide basis for an international corporation. And so it came a little bit as a surprise for me when God called me into missions, because missions, I thought, has nothing to do with finances. So why did I do finances when I now go and save the poor people in Africa, you know, like you? So we went on a trip in 94. We left Germany. We went on a trip first to England, then to Scotland, then to Kenya for 2 years, where I worked with street children in the slums of Nairobi, then to Namibia for 7 years, where they kicked me out because of what I'm going to tell and share with you over the next 2.5 days, until we finally arrived here. But it was not until 1998, so 4 years into our missions walk, that God really said, listen, I didn't train you in finances so that you can kick it out of the window. I have a plan for you. And so he started revealing his plans and his principles and wisdom in finances and his workings to me. And had me basically start doing a seminar like I do now. Started off with an hour. It's now 2.5 days, very intense. You will probably be happy when you can leave here on Saturday. Yeah, so that's what I'm doing. I'm here in this country as a guest. I'm not a permanent resident. I'm just here a temporary resident on a missionary visa. So I'm allowed to do charitable work, which I do to you now.
You have money, you must start driving.
No, I'm not earning anything out of this, and with the bribes we speak. Come on in. Is that Neil or John? Peter? Okay. Welcome here. You need to register, leave your money, and then you can... Anyway, I found it very interesting, because I've been in different countries here in Africa and different nations, even in Europe, and looking at what is happening financially and seeing what God is saying, find it quite interesting and like a word for the time. And it seems to increase the confirmation that what you are about to hear is really on time, something God is really on his heart. Now, my name is Gottfried, but I'm not God, which means what I tell you must not necessarily be the whole truth. It's the revelation I have. So it's up to you to check out whether what I'm saying is of God or not, because you have to bring it back to God and say, listen, is that true? Is what this guy is telling me real? And that's why I would like you to hold on to what the Apostle Paul is saying. Test everything and hold on to the good. Never ever do anything or react just because I say so, because once you stand before your Creator, you will not have the chance to say, Gottfried said, so I did. You must do because God says, okay? Now, Billy Graham, you know Billy Graham, don't you? By name. One of the greatest evangelists, and one guy who had tens, if not hundreds of thousands of counseling sessions in his life, long life, he says, based on this experience, if a man gets his attitude towards money straight, it will straighten out almost every other area in his life, which is quite remarkable. I didn't really believe it, and then when we were still living in Namibia, I got a call from TBM, and they wanted me to put a series together, which never materialized, by the way, but on finances, because they found out that most problems really have their root in the financial realm, and that's the reason for it. So, since we will be talking about this the next 2.5 days, welcome, come on in, register if you haven't, otherwise just join the troops, join the troops and enjoy yourself. Jesus said, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples, then you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. He didn't say if you hold to Gottfried's teaching. He didn't say if you hold to this or that person's teaching. He said if you hold to my teaching. That's why your obligation is to find out whether what I'm sharing with you over the next 2.5 days is really from God. That's your responsibility. Now, it will be tough. I can promise you, it will be tough. And usually I start off saying, listen, either you become my friend or my enemy. Because it will cut right through bone and marrow what we will be talking about. But I always also say the very reason that you're sitting here tells me that you're not satisfied with the status quo, which is good. Because if you would be, you wouldn't even come here. So we are on good ground. I hope we enjoy each other. I'm a very simple guy. Asked Francois and his family, you know, when I'm grumpy, you better avoid me. When I'm angry, you better leave the room. If I'm happy, no, I'm fairly easygoing. If you have a question or so, just ask me. If I don't want to answer, I don't do it anyway. But I hope that despite all the gravity of the theme, that we're going to have some fun here. And the previous few seminars have proven that we really could enjoy each other's company despite all the challenges. And this is what I pray as well. Good. Now, what can you expect? Well, you can expect a lot. You can expect a nice presentation. You can expect something which talks about the imminent global financial crash tonight. This is what we will cover tonight, and I go a little bit more into detail. And you can expect me to share about what I believe God has given us as a kingdom road to safety. Here is the content of the next 2.5 days. I will just quickly talk about today's problems and challenges before I start at the beginning. The very beginning, the way we think and reason, why we think the way we think, etc. Then I will ask you a question which you might answer very quickly, but if I ask you the same question in 2 days' time, you probably have no answer on it anymore. You're not so sure anymore. Then we will talk about the monetary system all tonight of this world, about money, interest, compound interest, banks, inflation, deflation, and we will even talk about the problems arising from the monetary system. With enforced growth, and you can read it for yourself. The reason why I do that is you will not understand what God is saying if you don't know what's happening in the world. If you don't understand the system we are working with, you will not understand why God is saying what He is saying. I've tried, I've done the seminar without this first part until the beginning of this year, and I was wondering why I never had really an effect. I'm not sure whether I have an effect now. Every now and then I hear a little bit, but it's easier to change if you know what goes wrong. Would you agree? You're still smiling. We can't change that. From tomorrow, probably, we will start talking about solutions to the problems, something I call the nagging question. We talk a little bit about debt relief, new systems, and then what I believe is the only successful approach. I can't cover everything, but I want to give you a nice overview of all the possibilities and things that are going on. Then I want to introduce you to a new framework of thinking. Excuse me. Eternal perspective. I want to draw a few comparisons between the kingdom of God and the world system. Ownership versus stewardship. I want to talk about God's plumb line, principles as such, a little bit about Egypt and Canaan and God's point of view on money. All which might not really make a picture to you, sense to you, but you will see as we go along one puzzle piece at the, or one, yeah, puzzle. Do you call it puzzle? We'll come to the next and we'll form a nice picture by the end of 2.5 days. And then, for 1.5 days, we basically cover all this, which I don't want to go too much into, but we talk about kingdom from left to right, from top to down, from inside to outside, from outside to inside, and what. And I categorize it a little bit. I explain that to you from tomorrow afternoon onwards. And then the question always, what now? Where do we go from here? Apart from going home, of course. And so we will talk about this as well by the end of the 2.5 days. And then I will leave you with a challenge, which hopefully is a challenge. So there you go. Now you know. It even rhymes. But before I want to start, I want to say that what you get over 2.5 days is not all mine. Most of it is probably a revelation God has given me. But other extents are revelations God has given or insight God has given to other people. And here's a whole bunch of them, Christian and non-Christians alike. Some financial experts, others are not. And I've rubbed shoulders partly in person, partly via video, partly via books with these people, have inquired of them whether I can utilize some of their material, etc. Most of them were quite happy. And what you get is a mixture of all those people. I don't believe everything these people say. So it only would confirm my stance against it. I also have things I couldn't say better than they do. So I utilize that as well. So I just want you to know, you know, there's a thingy about teachers and writers, etc., which is called plagiarism. And we shouldn't fall into that one. Sell something as our own, which is not. But you get everything which you see of these people and of Gottfried over the next 2.5 days, you get in a little booklet, which is about 44 pages full of material. You only get it on Saturday. If I give it to you now, you don't even listen to me anymore. So you only get it on Saturday, but whatever you see, you find in here. Except two pictures, which I only put in this morning, and a couple of comparisons which I only put in this morning. But I will tell you. So you don't have to write what you see. If you want to take notes, if there's something which is bothering you, if you have a question which is not answered there, not spoken out here, write it down. That is something you better plot down. Otherwise, I want you to concentrate. Okay? Because you have to swallow a lot. Are you ready? Are you? Good. Let's go. Nice picture, isn't it? Huh? It's amazing, huh? Yeah. Now today we have quite a number of challenges. Like always, we have challenges, but they are getting heavier and heavier and stronger and stronger, I believe, you know. I just want to brush quickly over what is happening, not just in Africa, but in general. And then I lose a few words, maybe even about South Africa. But what we have is the battle for survival in poorer regions, which covers most of Africa. People who struggle even to provide for the most basic needs, shelter, water, electricity, clothing, food. That's why I said even this one, you know, this most celebrated finance minister needs to be read and studied carefully. I don't want to cast him down, I don't want to brush him aside because he seems to be a good guy and I don't know whether he's even pleasant to have around. And he's certainly heading for a good direction. But we need to know whether the stuff which is presented to us is real. Because that's reality, and we see every day around us. Whoops. Then we have worldwide an increase in exploitation and oppression of the poor and disadvantaged. I don't know whether you notice this, but it seems like the strong ones get stronger, the rich ones get richer, the powerful get more powerful, and those who are at the receiving end turn in the opposite direction. And no matter what we do, it still works against each other, or away from each other. There are reasons for it, and we will cover some of them. Social unrest we have, and economic refugees from rural areas into cities, and from poorer regions into richer nations. We call it today, is it urbanization or what? I think it's where all the people move from the countryside to the cities because they believe life is better, which is not true. And then we end up with what we see here with our townships and what have you, where people even struggle more than they would in the countryside. In the same way, you have whole nations fleeing their physical boundaries into so-called developed nations because they believe they are better off over there. So they flee into Europe, into America, and what have you, with all the problems that come with it. It's all to do with finances. We have wars over natural resources. I can prove to you, and maybe we do it even in the course of time, that even the wars which we have in the Middle East, in Iraq, they have nothing to do with terrorism in its origin. It is a war over resources. We need to know that. If you understand how the system works, then you will understand why stuff like that is happening, which can take the scales of your eyes and you can see things more clearly and understand why God is saying what he is saying. We have increasing exploitation of natural resources and mounting ecological destruction. It depends on how much we really broaden our horizon, how much we read into the news, how much we see, how much we look beyond our little village or house or working spot. But if we are aware of what's going on, we see that whole nations get destroyed just because of their natural resources. And we exploit at a rate where you cannot replenish. And we basically start destroying our lifeline, either for ourselves or for the generations after us. And we think we are doing the right thing. We have high unemployment rates all over the world. I'm not sure whether you know that they are increasing. We say they are decreasing, but it's not true. They are increasing, and there's a reason for it. Even here in South Africa, I was a little bit amused when I read now that the plan is to generate 1,500 working places every day in the next financial year. That is 500,000 workspaces. Promise, every year a promise like this, and how much do you really see? You basically have no chance even to do it, or hardly have a chance. Most people don't know. And so you have unemployment rates rating from 10%, like in Germany, which is one of the richest nations in the world, 10 or 11%, up to 80%, like in African nations or in Southern America. And you wonder how the people can even survive. We have escalating indebtedness of individuals, corporations, communities, and even nations. There's hardly anyone around who is not indebted. And there's a reason for it. And we have mounting bankruptcies in businesses and looming bankruptcies even of nations. If you study a little bit what's going on the economic field, you see that sometimes nations only survive because quickly they get bailed out. Otherwise, they would destroy a whole world economy like Mexico did in 1987 or when they basically filed for bankruptcy. And in their how do you call the water after the ship, behind the ship? In their wake, they basically pulled the whole world down. It's all related to each other, and whether you believe it at the moment or not, it's all related to money in our financial system. That's why I find it important to explain to you how it really functions, how it works, even if I don't do it into too great of a detail, but that you understand the basics. We have what we call proliferation, which is an an overinvestment into armament, into nuclear power plants, everything which basically is designed to destroy. We spend more and more money into it. We have increasing shifting of wealth from the masses of the poor to the minority of the rich. Like I said, the rich become richer and the poor become poorer. No matter what you do, and all your good intentions usually have no effect whatsoever. And there is a reason for it. We have escalating corruption on all levels of society, loss of integrity. I'm still amazed how we treat corruption here in our country. We say we want to fight against corruption, but you don't see it. If you fight corruption, you don't have to advertise it. You do it. The deeds will show it. But we just talk, bah, 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 you know, like the toothless tiger or the dog who is barking and he's scared like I don't know what. And also with the integrity, you know, to me, I often use the example of our former deputy president, not to slander him, but if in a court case he was found to be in a, or his financial advisor was found to be in a corrupt relationship with him, it is evidence enough that he is corrupt as well, because there's always two sides. So why must he be tried? And to top it all, I don't know whether you know, he has applied for the government to pay his lawyers, so that the government paid lawyers can prove that he was not corrupt, which in itself is corrupt. I don't know whether you understand the gravity, but it's ridiculous. Just ridiculous. Anyway, this is what we are facing today. We have growing crime rates supported by increasingly corrupt justice systems. I don't know whether you are aware that we cannot have justice in our nation because we undermine our own justice system. The government, who should be upholding the justice system, is destroying it. They don't know it, but they do. And if the top destroys values, the bottom cannot uphold. So this is what we have. This is just a quick shot. And if you look at South Africa, then you come with this. This is good news compared to all the bad news which we read. There's a lot of good news, you know. They tell you next year we have 446 billion rand available to dish out. What they do not tell you is where it's coming from. And where it's going to. They tell you in part, and if you don't understand, you cannot connect the little pieces. You need to start connecting, you see. I already started now, 446, where is it coming from? So I wanted to know. And they say 132 is coming from tax from individuals, from you and I. No, I don't pay tax, because I don't earn a salary here, but from you. So you pay one quarter. And the other quarter is coming from companies. So there you go. And the other half, nobody tells you where that is coming from, but maybe we find out. It must come from somewhere. You see, it's not wrong rejoicing in good news, but you need to know whether these are good news or not. Because we are so blind often, we don't understand what we are reading. We think that's good. Here they say, 5 cents per liter petrol will contribute to the 446 million. You know what it means? It means that each one of us, every time we put petrol in the in our car, we have to cough up more. So bottom line, and I'm nasty now, please forgive me, bottom line, this man is dishing out what we pay anyway. See, and he is celebrated, and this is the downside of this nice chap. He is now made like an idol, because everybody is looking up to it. And when, if you look, you see these are 20 pages just on the budget, and they show you, they celebrate this man from inside out, every decade, every year, what he did and how he performed and da 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 da. I think he, if you would ask him, he wouldn't like it to see this. I believe, I don't know him, but that's the way I perceive him. But it's not true what they portray, because they say we do this for you, but they don't. They use what belongs to you anyway, and then give it back to you. They take it away and then give it back to you, and want you to be happy. I'm nasty, I know, but I'm deliberately nasty now. Because I want you to wake up. I know the day has been long already, but I still want you to wake up. And so I'm going to wake you up now. Then we have increasing pressure and workloads for those who still have work. I don't know whether you notice, but those who have work, they constantly have to work more. And you wonder why. And then we get all this nice equipment and things are much easier now, and all of a sudden we have more work. And then we have more work, and these close down, and we have to take over, and then we have to compensate, and this is how it works. Anyway. In the end, there is just hopelessness, capitulation, frustration, anger, selfishness, fierce competition, isolation, or the I don't care anymore mentality left. And this is what you find in people. This is really what you find in the people around you. I mean, I find it. I don't know about you at your workplace or at homes or in your circle of acquaintances or friends or whatever. So it all has a reason, but I want to start in the beginning. So I take you right back before there was anything. Are you ready? Good. Because now you need to look there and not here anymore. I speak to you, but you look there. It's me. I can't prove it, but it's me. You can check for yourself whether I'm right or wrong. But it's me who believes that it is very crucial of what I believe in, the way I live my life. If I believe a lie, I live a lie. If I believe the truth, I can live the truth. So it very much determines what I believe in, how I spend my life. Can I ask you a question? Whom do you serve? Whom do you serve?
I think the majority of the time I serve God, but I think very often I inadvertently serve money, and possibly quite a few other things in my life.
Whom do you serve? Listen, be honest here. Don't. Here's no place for pretense or masquerade or so.
I want to say I serve God, but I know that my heart is divided, because I know that the threat of losing money is a threat.
Eric, whom do you serve?
Well, I'm aiming for God. Very hard.
Whom do you serve?
No, I want to say God, but the money thing is money.
Who do you serve? Yeah, our pastor's couple. Whom do you serve? Ciao, whom do you serve? Let's dig a little deeper, and then I ask you again. I want to make a comparison between what we know as evolution and special creation. A comparison between there is a God with a divine plan and there is no God at all. There is a lot of mixture between the two, but if we look at the two opposites, we probably can define a lot of problems already, attitudes or the way we approach life. And I just want to do that, and you will see that it has quite some implications on the way we live and make decisions, even if most people don't realize that. But let's take it one step at a time. Okay, so here is what these different concepts, if you want to call them like this, say. First, in the beginning there was nothing, says evolution. And the Bible says in the beginning there was Genesis 1 verse 1. So there's already a difference. And then from nowhere a big bang, and from nothing came everything. This is what basically evolution teaches in a nutshell. And special creation talks about God deciding to create and does so by his word and infinite power. Now, we don't want to go too much into detail how that happened, etc. Maybe even that happened with a big bang, but then it was because God said so. Okay? But it means that under the evolution theory, everything that was and is came by chance. There's no deliberate act, there's no plan, it's a pure accident, it just so happened. The way you look today is just an accident, actually. Even that you can think, even that you can walk, and that I can talk to you is an accident. It was never planned. If you drive it to the extreme, this is what evolution teaches. It came by pure chance. That's it. Now, on the other hand, special creation says everything was created deliberately the way it is. We might have messed up, but that we are human beings is because we were supposed to be human beings. That we can think is because God gave us a brain. That we have a spirit and a mind and all these different aspects of our being. It was done deliberately. So there you go. Already we have two opposites. But we are not finished. Now, what about human beings? Evolution says, well, somehow we evolved from a primitive substance into a complex human being. I don't know whether you remember biology at school. I still have this picture, you know, where we started first walking on all four like the apes, and then we grew up slowly but surely. I was always wondering how long it took. But I believed it. And I come from a Christian home. This is what we get taught. Or got taught and still get taught. Yeah. We were created human beings right from the beginning. This is what the Bible says. There is no doubt. Okay. So far we can agree. And now, what now? Well, if evolution is true, then somehow humankind still develops into higher beings. And I just wait for the day where we start flying. Without wings. Without Red Bull. In other words, there's still an ongoing process. We don't know whether we change back into apes. I often ask, why are there still apes around if we developed into human beings? So something must have gone wrong. Or why? Who says that tomorrow we don't change back into apes? But special creation is clear. Humankind, the creation of humankind is done, finished and clear. That's it. Now, what about survival? Evolution teaches only the fittest. Because if, you know, we have to develop, only those who are the strongest are really making space for themselves. They really can accomplish something. So only the fittest really have a chance. Now, special creation teaches something different. The Bible says everybody can survive. And I don't know whether you already realize, if you still believe or act on evolutionary patterns, you will be competitive in all your approach. Something God has never said. You understand where I'm going? If not, let's continue. Maybe it's coming. What about the higher moral authority? You see, since there is no God, since everything just happened to happen, we ourselves are the moral authority. There's nobody we really have to give account to. There are no absolutes. What I say is right, what you say is wrong. It's only right as long as it agrees with what I'm saying. This is how life works. I don't know whether you see it in society. One group is saying this is how it is, and that's the truth. And the other group says, no, this is how it is, and that is the truth. And the truth is that I just messed up. If you have no absolutes, if you don't know what to measure against, you don't know what is right and wrong. And this is exactly what we have in evolution. That's why we can have a movement today for this, and tomorrow we have a movement for that. All those guys who walk in this direction today walk in the other direction tomorrow, because there's nothing they can measure against. But the Bible is very clear that there is somebody who is in charge, and that's God. He is the moral authority, and he has clearly defined absolutes against which we can measure whatever we do. That's why you cannot even go in Christianity alone can say, listen, they do it this way, so let's do it that way. And we say, no, we rather want to do it this way. What we have to ask is, God, what is your way?
Yeah.
Next one, what about life purpose? Well, since there is no God, we must decide for ourselves. You find out what your life purpose is. You know, if your life purpose is going on holiday, so be it. If it is of sleeping around with as many women or men as you can, well, you go for it. As long as you have fun, it's fine. But this is not what God has said. You know, we are here for a reason. There's a purpose for each individual. And the very reason that you sit in this room even is purposed by God. Did you know this? You think you made a decision. But you, who do you think prompted you to come and say yes, even if you doubt it? Because there is somebody who is bigger than we, there's somebody in control, there's somebody who has a purpose and he wants us to find out why we are here. Yes. 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 Although destiny is not really the proper word, because you can abuse the word destiny quite a lot. You say, this is my destiny, and you leave everything else. Purpose involves everything else in order to get to destiny. What about accountability? Since there is no God, nobody bigger than I'm not accountable to anyone. I can do as I please. And this is what we even see among Christians. Well, from God's point of view, you have no choice, because each one of us will give an account of his life. That's why you even cannot do something because I say so. You only can do so because God said so. It will not help you if you stand before your Creator and says, you know, one day I was with this German guy and he told me that's why I did. And God said, so, I just used him. What did I say to you? Well, I don't know. You understand? I'm sure you do. The conclusion is, in evolution, we don't need God. Man is in charge. Whereas, if we understand special creation, if we understand God, then we know that we need him. Because we are not in charge. God is in charge, and he knows what is best. Now you tell me, on which set you work. How is your life functioning? On the red side or on the blue side? No, don't answer. Don't answer, because I believe you just tell me a story anyway. No, I'm unfair, I know. But my discovery is, even with my own life, I say I'm acting on the blue side. But my life is taking place here. I say I believe God, but I act as if God does not exist. I say, God, you are in charge, but I am. I say, God, your absolutes are right, but I decide what is right and wrong. No, we are not finished. It's just the taste is getting better. Then we have the clever people who say, well, listen, evolution is scientifically proven. You probably know that's rubbish, do you? So we can skip this slide? Let's just, for the sake of... Listen, I'm an open book, man. What you see is what you get. I don't tell you any rubbish or so. I am the way I am, and you get the way I am, even if I'm a bit distorted. I wish that you are an open book as well. Not so that I can tear you down, but we have much more fun and can much more enjoy really God's challenges if we are just open. So thanks for your openness, just running to So here's what Julian Huxley said. Julian Huxley, one of the most fervent fighters for evolution. He wrote a book, maybe a few books, and in one of them, in What is Man, in a chapter called Evolution and Genetics, he said this, which you don't really have to understand. I just use it to prove something to you. Evolution in the extended sense can be defined as a directional and essentially irreversible process. Are you still with me? Occurring in time. I read it from here. which in its course gives rise to an increase of variety and an increasingly high level of organization in its products. Did you understand what he said? Okay, our present knowledge indeed forces us to the view. That's a very dangerous statement. Our present knowledge forces us to the view, which basically is saying we don't know. It's just a diplomatic, it's a political way of saying things. Our present knowledge indeed forces us to the view that the whole of reality is evolution. There you go, the whole of reality is evolution, which means everything is just evolving into something bigger, higher. A single process of self-transformation. There you go. Now let's dissect it a little bit, very quick. Because the increase of variety speaks of innovation. Increase of variety means there is more stuff which wasn't there, which means innovation, right? Now here's what science says. The first law of thermodynamics, the law of conservation of mass energy, says the fundamental structure of the cosmos is one of conservation, not innovation. In other words, everything that is there is there. It just changes, but you cannot add something. The total energy in the universe is constant, but the quantity of energy available is decreased. In other words, if you burn fuel, do you have less energy afterwards? Yes. Sure. That's right. If you don't touch this room for 2 years, does it fall apart? Yes. Kind of. It depends on the structure, but you know what I mean. This is how God designed it. If you don't put something back into it in order to establish something, it's falling apart. So what we have is not innovation, we have the opposite. So the first law of thermodynamics basically refutes this most comprehensive statement ever made on evolution. But we have another one in this, because we have this increasingly high level of organization which talks of increasing complexity. I don't know, do you know a little bit about microchips? I come from the microchip industry. You know, when we started off, it was like you had a chip of this size. And now, on this size, you have a million chips which are even more powerful than the one you had before of this size. This little notebook has more power than the whole mainframe which we had in a room which is as big as the house in the first company I worked for. This is complexity. This is what we talk about, complexity. Now, what Huxley is saying, that the complexity in life increases. And here is what the second law of thermodynamics, the law of increasing entropy, says. It says there's a universal process of change, and it's a directional change, but not upwards, but downwards. Like I said just now, everything is rather falling apart. Actually, the first statement I should put with the second law. Everything is falling apart, so it's not getting more complex. By just leaving it there, it's not getting more complex. It's disintegrating. It's the other way around. So even that one doesn't fit. That's why you can understand that evolution theorists will never get into discussions with scientists. They won't. But anyway, let's leave that. A few questions, because we need to rush on. I don't want to keep you too long, only 3 more hours. Did you know? Did you know that evolution contradicts everything science can prove? Did you know that? It's a question. Did you know that? No, I didn't know until I read it. But there you go, now you know. Now, what you need to know is that evolution is still the basis for almost all educational material in schools and universities all over the world. It is. It's the very thing that gets entwined into our fiber. This is how we grow up. This is how our kids are trained. They think evolutionary pattern. That's why even when they become a Christian, they compete with one another. They fight the fight of the survival of the fittest. And they miss the mark. So whom do you serve? Did you know, not even a century ago, the top brass of all universities around the world and their teaching revolved around God and creation. It was based on the Bible. It's only 100 years that it changed. Nobody doubted ever of the capacities, even the big inventors doubted that God is in charge. They just wanted to find out what God did now and how did he do it. Now we try to find out how we can do it without God. And this is what we teach our kids. We systematically teach them you don't need God. Science can only prove to be true what takes place today. Did you know that? Because science is limited. What doesn't fly today, you cannot prove to be flying. If it flew 1 million years ago and you were not there, you cannot prove. You can make a few statements. You can get close and say, well, we can anticipate and it looks like, etc. But you cannot prove because you were not there. You didn't fly. You understand? In that sense, neither special creation nor evolution can be proven because none of us was there except God. If God existed. So we don't know what is scientifically true. But what we know is that everything we can prove supports rather special creation than evolution. Okay, now, therefore, you need more faith to believe in the non-existence of God than you need faith to believe in God. This is why it's funny when the people say, listen, I don't believe in God. Yeah, these guys, they have real faith. It's true. Because they believe in something which is a lie, and you need a lot of faith to believe in a lie.